ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 8 चैप्टर 10 चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड द बैटल बिटवीन द डेमिगॉड्स एंड डीमंस टेक्स्ट नंबर 7-25 So we'll recite the text number 7. Shankaturya Mridanganam Beri Damarinam Mahan Hastyashvarata Pattinam Nadatam Nisvano Bhavat. Translation: the sounds of the conch shells, bugles, drums, bearies and damaris, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses and soldiers who are both on chariots and on foot, were tumultuous. So I'll read the translation till we come to a purport. On that battlefield, the charioteers fought with the opposing charioteers, the infantry soldiers with the opposing infantry, the soldiers on horseback with the opposing soldiers on horseback, and the soldiers on the backs of elephants with the enemy soldiers on elephants. In this way, the fighting took place between equals. Text number 9. Some soldiers fought on the backs of camels, some on the backs of elephants, some on asses, some on white-faced and red-faced monkeys, some on tigers, and some on lions. In this way, they all engaged in fighting. O king, some soldiers fought on the backs of vultures, eagles, ducks, hawks, and basa birds. Some fought on the backs of timingalas, which can devour huge whales, some on the backs of sharabas, and some on buffalo, rhinoceros, cows, bulls, jungle cows, and arunas. Others fought on the backs of jackals, rats, lizards, rabbits, human beings, goats, black deer, swans, and boars. In this way, mounted on animals of the water, land and sky, including animals with deformed bodies, both armies faced each other and went forward. O king, O descendant of Maharaj Pandu, the soldiers of both the demigods and demons were decorated by canopies, colorful flags and umbrellas with handles made of valuable jewels and pearls. They were further decorated by fans made of peacock feathers and by other fans also. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful. And in the light of the glittering sunshine, their shields, ornaments, and sharp, clean weapons appeared dazzling. Thus the ranks of soldiers seemed like two oceans with bands of aquatics. For that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Maharaj Bali, son of Virochan, was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vaihayas. O king, this beautifully decorated airplane had been manufactured by the demon Maya and was equipped with weapons for all types of combat. It was inconceivable and indescribable. Indeed, it was sometimes visible and sometimes not. Seated in this airplane, under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of chamaras, Maharaj Bali, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. Surrounding Maharaj Bali on all sides were the commanders and captains of the demons sitting on their respective chariots. Among them were the following demons: Namuchi, Shambhara, Bana, Viprachitti, Ayomukha, Dvimurda, Kalanaba, Praheti, Heti, Ilvala, Shakuni, Bhuta Santapa, Vajradamsha, Virochan, Hayagriva, Shankushira, Kapila, Megadundabi, Taraka, Chakradrik, Shumba, Nishumba, Jamba, Utkala, Arishta, Arishtanemi, Tripurardipa, Maya, the sons of Puloma, the Kaleyas, and Nivata Kavacha. All of these demons had been deprived of their share of the nectar and had shared merely in the labor of churning the ocean. Now they fought against the demigods, and to encourage their armies, they made a tumultuous sound like the roaring of lions and blew loudly on conch shells. Balabit, Lord Indra, upon seeing the situation of his ferocious rivals, became extremely angry. Text number 25. Sitting on Airavat, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. On the top of the mountain called Udayagiri are large lakes from which water continuously pours in waterfalls. Similarly, Indra's carrier, Airavata, holds water and wine in reserve and showers it in the direction of Lord Indra. Thus, Indra, king of heaven, sitting on the back of Airavata, appeared like the brilliant sun rising above Udayagiri. Seek the blessings of the assembled devotees before trying to speak something on Srimad Bhagavatam. We are reading this chapter entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. As you know, this after the demons and demigods, when they received nectar from the churning of the milk ocean, we heard the pastime that how Mohini Murthy snatched the nectar from the demons. And she distributed the nectar to the demigods. So then, because the demons were cheated by Mohini Murthy, and because the demigods took all the nectar, now the demons became very angry, and now they started fighting against the demigods. So we can see like their series of verses, but Prabhupada just makes a purport on text number 25. And especially in the previous verses, like text number 16, 19 to 24, it's mentioned that how there are so many demons who are fighting on the sides of the Virochan, on the sides of Balimara, the son of Virochan. So many times, like one may wonder, what is the need to mention all these names of the demons. So although these are names of the demons which are mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that when a person reads these names, definitely one will be purified, because they are all related, they are all in relation to the Supreme Lord. Just like, suppose there is a salt mine is there. So when a person enters a salt mine, so even if he is eating rasgulla, somebody serves him a plate of rasgullas, but then because it's a salt mine, from everywhere salt is falling, everywhere is filled with salt, so even that rasgulla may taste salty. It will develop the same characteristic of the salt. So similarly, although these are names of the demons, but because they come within Srimad Bhagavatam, so when we read these names, we will get the same effect of reading the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. We'll be purified. Because they are all in relation to the Supreme Personality of God. And another point, there are a few points which I wanted to talk about. So here it's mentioned that all of these demons had been deprived of their share of the nectar. So all these demons, they put a huge effort in churning the ocean of milk. It's not just an ordinary thing. They're churning the ocean of milk. So they had actually invested so much of time and energy in churning this ocean just with the motive of getting nectar. So especially when a person puts a lot of time and energy in a particular task, and then when that goes wrong, then one becomes like, all of us become very disturbed. Like suppose you're studying so hard throughout the year, and then after the exam, if you're failing in the exam, the person becomes very much disappointed. Or like suppose a person is cooking elaborate preparation. He works so hard for many hours, but then at the end, because of a small mistake, the final item does not come properly. So then the person becomes disturbed. So any effort, when a person puts a lot of time and energy, then finally when the result is exactly opposite, and the result is not according to one's expectation, or when the results are taken away from the person, then a person becomes very much disturbed. That's why we see in the Srimad, the Bhagavad Gita, like Krishna, in many verses in the Bhagavad Gita, says that one should perform one's work without attachment for the results. So demons were performing their activity with great attachment for the nectar. So that is why when the nectar was snatched away from them, they became so angry, and then they started fighting against the demigods. So this attachment for the, even if a person has a small attachment, it can actually result in a great danger in one's life. Just like a small fire in a tree, it can consume the whole tree. So similarly, even a small attachment can lead a person in the wrong direction. Like sometimes one may wonder that, one may think that I don't have so many attachments. But then, during our day we go through so many different thoughts, sometimes lust, greed, envy, anger, illusion. So when we get these small thoughts, so we can understand that actually the anarthas are deep-rooted. Just like, suppose in the ocean, suppose if you see bubbles on the surface of the water, you must understand that there is contamination deep within the water. That is why the bubbles are there. So similarly, when we get these small thoughts, we can understand that actually the attachment is deep-rooted. Especially the demons, they are so attached to the nectar. So as soon as the nectar was taken away, they declared a fight against the demigods. One devotee gave an example. The difference between a neophyte devotee and advanced devotee. A neophyte devotee is like a glue. Suppose we are pasting a paper on a surface or something with the help of a glue. And then when you try to tear that paper, when you try to remove that, because it is actually, you paste it with the help of a glue, the paper will get torn. But then if you have pasted with the help of a blue tag, then you can remove the paper without tearing of the paper. It will not disturb the paper. So similarly, the neophyte devotee, initially one may be attached to the service. Then when there is a small change in the service, then one becomes disturbed. But then advanced devotee is one who is attached to the principle of service. So even when there is some small change in the service, then he will not get disturbed. Like Gaurang Prabhu was speaking in one Bhagavatam class about this example of Yudhishthira Maharaj. In the seventh canto, we hear this description that when Yudhishthira Maharaj was performing the Rajasya sacrifice, he saw that right at the most auspicious moment, Shishupal starts blaspheming Lord Krishna. And this time, Shishupal's envy was so much that he did not keep track of his number of blasphemies. Because Lord Krishna had given a benediction that if you go above 99, then I will kill you. But this time, Shishupal's envy was so much. In fact, Holiness Radhanath Maharaj was telling in a class that Shishupal's envy towards Lord Krishna was, it was as intense as Gopi's love towards Krishna. Just like Gopi's love towards Krishna is so difficult to comprehend, similarly, Shishupal's envy towards Krishna is also so difficult to comprehend. So then Krishna, because Shishupal went beyond 99, Krishna actually killed Shishupal with the Sudarshan Chakra. So right at the auspicious moment Shishupal was killed, then Yudhishthira Maharaj immediately asked a question to Narada Muni he asked a question because he saw that right in front of everyone's eyes that Shishupal's soul merged into the body of Lord Krishna. He achieved a Sayujya Mukti. Then he became greatly surprised. How is it that a demon like Shishupal, who was so envious of Lord Krishna, he could achieve liberation? So although Krishna was personally present in the assembly, Yudhishthira Maharaj chose to ask Narada Muni. So that shows that one can approach Lord Krishna or one can know about Krishna only through the medium of a devotee. So there he was making the point that although Yudhishthira Maharaj was actually organizing the whole sacrifice, and then right in the most important moment, a killing takes place in the sacrifice. So usually when you are organizing a big event and something goes wrong, we have our experience that we'll become disturbed. But then Yudhishthira Maharaj, because he was so Krishna conscious that he was absorbed in the thought of pleasing Krishna, he actually asked a question to Narada Muni. Please tell me how is it that Shishupal achieved Sayujya Mukti? Then Narada Muni speaks the whole seventh canto. He narrates the whole incident of how Shishupal in their previous life was Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, and how they are associates of the Lord. He narrates the whole Hiranyakashipu's pastime, Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad Maharaj's pastime. So Yudhishthira Maharaj had complete attachment to Krishna, and at the same time he had complete detachment. And in fact, another point which is mentioned is, it's not that only the demons were attached to the nectar, the demigods were also attached to the nectar. Here the particular word used for Indra is Balabit. When Prabhupada gives the word to word translation, he says Balabit, he translates as being afraid of the strength. So Indra also became afraid when he saw that the demons have declared a fight, war against the demigods. So because although the demigods were great devotees of the Lord, but still they also had that attachment to the nectar. But then they always depended on Lord Vishnu, but still they were attached to the nectar. So that's why they also became afraid when they saw that the demigods, demons were fighting against him. So we can see that only when a person's mind is completely focused in the Supreme Lord, then a person becomes free from all these dualities. There was this nice prayer which is offered by the Prachetas to Lord Vishnu, which the Prachetas say, Manas apartham vilasadvayaya. They say that when the mind is absorbed in the Supreme Lord, then the material world, which is filled with dualities like happiness, distress, or honor, dishonor, or good health, or sickness, or so many dualities are present in the material world. So all these dualities become meaningless when the mind is absorbed in the Supreme. We see in the example of Arjuna, like Arjuna, when the Pandavas were in exile, when they were in the forest, especially when they were during the Agyatavas, when they were incognito in the kingdom of Virata. So that time, the Kauravas attacked the kingdom of Virata. So when the Kauravas attacked the kingdom of Virata, the Virat Raj was not present in the kingdom. So all those people, all the citizens, they informed the prince, whose name was Bhuminjay, that Kauravas have attacked, please do something. All our animals have been taken away by the Kauravas. So then this prince Bhuminjay, he actually boldly declares that I will go and kill all the Kauravas and I will bring all their crowns and dresses. He actually boldly declares to all the, he was boasting himself to all the ladies present in the in that assembly. So then he goes to fight. So that time, then he says that actually, only thing is that my charioteer is not there. If somebody can, my charioteer is ill or something like that, he says. If somebody can volunteer to drive my chariot, then I will go and fight the battle. So then they chose Brihannala, who was actually Arjuna, as a charioteer of Vira, the prince Bhuminjay. So then Arjuna goes as a charioteer to help actually Bhuminjay. Here, but then when Bhuminjay sees the Kauravas assembled there, he becomes so afraid and he starts running away from the battlefield. So that time Arjuna actually starts going behind him and then he says that Kshatriya should never leave the battlefield. Better to die in the battlefield than to actually run away from the battlefield. So here, Arjuna is actually preaching to Bhuminjay that how he should not run away from the battlefield. And here, Arjuna is actually in the body of a eunuch. When Urvashi had cursed Arjuna, you will become a eunuch. You will lose your manhood and you will lose all your respect. So Arjuna used that curse of Urvashi during that period of incognito. So when a person like Arjuna, who is so powerful, who is such a great person, for him to lose his manhood, it is like a great mental trauma. Like any person, we see there are so many examples. Sometimes a beautiful person, if he loses his beauty, if he or she loses his or her beauty, then like such persons become so depressed, isn't it? Like actresses, that there was one particular actress, she saw a wrinkle on her face, and then she just went inside her room, and then she never ever came in the public. Because when a person is attached to the beauty, and then when he loses his beauty, then it is like a great insult for such a person. Especially for a person like Arjuna, he was cursed that you will lose your manhood. So Arjuna was actually in the body of a eunuch, but although he was in the body of a eunuch, he was actually preaching to Bhuminjay that you should not leave the battlefield, you better fight the battle. So although he was in the body, his body was weak, in the sense that he has lost the luster of his body, he has lost his manhood, but his mind was strong. So he could preach to Bhuminjay. But in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Arjuna was no more a eunuch. He had regained his manhood. So his body was strong, but then his mind was weak. So because of that, he had to be preached the same instruction by Krishna. So better you fight the battle instead of leaving the battlefield. So we can see that because mind is the controller of all the senses, when the mind is absorbed in the Lord, even when a person faces so many dualities in this world, then he will not be affected by the dualities. On the other hand, when the mind is weak, then even a small problem to the body, mind can exaggerate that small problem to the body to a great extent. So here we see that even the demigods, because they were attached to the nectar, so they became afraid when the demons started attacking. And then we see that, so here the same point, that Indra became afraid of the strength of the demons. So this fear problem is actually, so there are four problems in the world: eating, mating, sleeping and fearing. So out of these four problems, the fear problem is most predominant in the material world. Like Krishna, in the first canto, it is described that when Krishna was entering Dwaraka, it is described that tam upashrutya ninadam jagat baya bayavaham. So Krishna blew his conch shell as he entered Dwaraka. So when the residents of Dwaraka, when they heard the conch shell, they heard the conch shell sound of Lord Krishna, which could destroy all the fear in the material world, jagat baya bayavaham, which can destroy even the fear personified. So they actually started towards Lord Krishna, very much anxious to see the form of Lord Krishna. So there Prabhupada says that out of all these four problems, the fear problem is the most predominant in the material world, because one does not know what is going to come next. And then he says that, so the solution for overcoming fear is, one should actually hear the holy name of the Lord. The sound, the conscious sound of the Lord is actually non-different from the holy name of the Lord. So when a person simply hears the holy name, then one will become free from all the fears. So here Indra, because all the demigods were attached to the nectar, they also became fearful. And then the next verse, it is described that Indra was sitting on the Airavat, an elephant who can go everywhere and holds water and wine in reserve for showering. And Indra looked just like the sun rising from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. So we see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, whenever they want to describe some beautiful, something which is like very beautiful, they compare it to a natural beauty which is found in this world. Like even we see that, again, in the first canto, we see that when the description of Dwaraka is mentioned, it is mentioned that Dwaraka is filled with many flower gardens, fruit orchards, lakes, reservoirs of water, etc. So again, Srila Prabhupada makes a nice point. He says that the propensity to utilize nature's gifts is there in every human being. In fact, we see that even in the, although people nowadays, people just want to stay in the cities, but although a person may want to stay in the cities, because in the cities only they have jobs, they want to earn a lot of money, so that's, one can get a job in cities to earn a lot of money. But then when they accumulate money, in order to enjoy that wealth, they'll go to some hill station, some like Lonavala, where there is some natural beauty is there. So that means, like, people, by nature, they are attracted to nature. They are attracted to natural beauty. Like, even Prabhupada says that, even in, like, leaders of the state, they may tell the citizens, they may put the citizens in the congested cities, but then they will have their own houses outside the city. Or even if they have their houses within the city, it will be like a bungalow. It will be like the bungalow surrounded by gardens, etc. Because a person, every human being by nature, he wants to be in the natural setting. So that is the point. So here also the beauty of Indra, who was actually riding on the elephant, it is compared to the sun rising from Udayagiri. So in the Udayagiri mountain, there are so many waterfalls are there. So on top of the Udayagiri mountain, when the sun rises, so that scene is so beautiful. The same scene is compared here. So Indra is riding on the Airavat carrier. This Airavat carrier, it showers some water and wine. So that scene is compared to that sun rising from the Udayagiri mountain, which has many waterfalls. And another point which I wanted to talk about is, like in the previous verse, it is described that when the demigods started fighting against the demons, it is described that they were actually riding on so many different animals. Some of them were riding on elephants, horses, eagles, asses. So many animals' names are mentioned. But then they were fighting with people on the same animals. Soldiers were fighting with the soldiers. Those who were riding on the airplanes, they were fighting with the persons in the airplanes. So this is like culture in the Vedic culture. Although they were fighting, but then they were following certain rules and regulation. Like we see now, like somebody may be going in the airplane, but then he'll put bombs upon those people who are in the ground. And from ground, people will shoot those who are actually riding in the airplane. So this is not actually the fighting culture which we see now. In fact, like Prabhupada gives the definition of a Kshatriya in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that Kshatriya means one who gives protection from the harm. So the nature, there are two things that are important for a Kshatriya. First of all, one has to have the nature of fighting. And then second thing is one has to have the bodily capability. So both have to be present. Like in the Kali Yuga, practically one may have the nature of fighting, but then he may be a very lean person. Or one may have a huge body, but then you may not have the nature of fighting. So both are important. And another thing is that when the Kshatriyas would be trained, Kshatriyas, I think Prabhupada mentions in Bhagavad Gita, Kshatriyas would actually go into the forest and they would challenge an animal face to face, tiger or lion. And when the tiger or lion is killed, then they would be actually given a royal cremation. So nowadays, like when the like soldiers are given training, like they have to shoot on a particular bullseye. So it's not like the training is, of course, that's necessary. But then, like in the previous time, we see that training is like more is like challenging. They have to directly challenge a tiger or lion. And we see that although in the Vedic culture, people would fight, that they followed certain rules and regulations. In fact, Prabhupada mentions in the third canto that when Hiranyakashipu was fighting with, Hiranyaksha was fighting with Lord Varahadev, so Hiranyaksha threw his trident upon Lord Varahadev. So Varahadev, with his Sudarshan disc, he actually tore the trident to the pieces. Just like Indra's thunderbolt destroyed one of the wings of Garuda. So there, Prabhupada mentions in the purport that once when Garuda snatched the nectar from the demigods in order to deliver his mother, Vinata, from the curse of his stepmother, Kadru. So then when Indra saw that Garuda is taking away the nectar, then Indra came and attacked Garuda. So Indra threw his thunderbolt upon Garuda. So that time, it is mentioned that although Garuda is a very great personality, he was invincible because he was the carrier of Lord Vishnu, but still he wanted to give respect to the infallibility of Indra's weapon, thunderbolt. So he voluntarily gave away one of his wings in order to respect Indra's, the infallibility of Indra's thunderbolt. So there Prabhupada says that the inhabitants of the higher planets are so sensible that even in the process of fighting, they observe the preliminary rules and regulations of gentleness. So I just wanted to speak something on this process of respect. That's a few interesting verses I wanted to share. So when a person knows how to respect, like we see here, even in this fight, they had followed certain rules and regulations. So in this world, we see that out of these three miseries, adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhidaivika, especially in Kali Yuga, we see that miseries from other living entities, the relationship problems are the ones which actually give most problems. So we also have personal experience. This adhyatmic miseries from other living entities, they are the most predominant. And we see that how can these miseries be overcome? In the seventh canto, Narada Muni says, especially the miseries from other living entities can be overcome simply by proper behavior and by giving up envy. So by these two things, one can overcome the miseries from other living entities. And there is one very nice verse when Narada Muni speaks to Dhruva Maharaj. He says, Gunadikan mudam lipset anukrosha gunadamad maitrim samanad anvichen natapair abhibhuyate. Narada Muni is saying that how can a person become free from the miseries? He says that when a person sees somebody who is having better qualities, guna adhikan, when a person sees somebody else who is having better qualities than themselves, then he should respect such a person. He should be pleased with such a person. Guna adhikan mudam lipset. And when a person sees somebody who is having lesser qualities than oneself, then one should try to elevate such a person by showing compassion. Anukrosha gunadamat. And when a person sees somebody who is on an equal level, maitrim samanad anvichen, one should try to develop friendship with such a person. If a person follows these three principles, then what will happen? Na tapair abhibhuyate. One will not be affected by any of the miseries. Like Prabhupada says that, like usually, when we see somebody who is having better qualities, we usually become envious. Like there was one, I think in UK or somewhere, one person was standing in the election, So during the election campaign, it's an election for Prime Minister, I think. During the election campaign, like we see during the election campaign, like a person usually speaks against the opposite party who is standing in the opposite against him. So he was like very much against the other person who was standing against him. So just before one particular election rally, somebody gave him the message that the person who is standing against you, he's actually died. So he gave the message to this particular person. Then that during that election rally, he started glorifying the opposite person who was standing against him. Then at the end, he said, actually, I speak all these words only on the condition that the person is dead. Otherwise, I take back all these words. So usually we see that, so that is the nature of the world, that usually a person becomes envious when we see somebody who has better qualities than himself. Or like once a US president was going, he went to the parade of army soldiers. So then one soldier saluted him, so immediately saluted him back. President saluted him back. So the other officer said, come on, he's just an ordinary soldier. Why do you have to salute him back? He said, if an ordinary soldier can follow the etiquette, if I do not follow, then that means I am lesser than him. So in this way, the point is that when a person follows these three principles, that one will become free from all the miseries, especially the miseries from other living entities. And another point, another one inspiring verse which I read in the fourth canto, the story of Puranjan. So it's described that how this king Puranjan, he goes to the forest to hunt the animals. And then after he becomes tired of hunting the animals, then he comes back to the palace. And then he sees his wife. And then when he sees his wife, Puranjani, he develops a desire to enjoy his wife. And then he sees that his wife is in a very morose condition. So then he actually starts pacifying his wife. In one of the verses, he says that, please tell me who has actually caused this moroseness in you. Is it that somebody has offended you? Then he says that, O hero's wife, kindly tell me who has offended you. So I will punish anybody who has offended you, except if that person is a Brahmana. Then he says that, except for a person who is a devotee of Lord Murari, I will punish anybody if he has offended you. So here, interesting point is that this Puranjan, he actually wanted to enjoy his wife. Although he had the enjoying propensity, but still he knew the proper behavior, in the sense that he was afraid of offending a devotee of the Lord. He's saying that, I will punish anybody except he is a devotee of the Lord. So this is the behavior exhibited by Puranjani. So one may have the enjoying propensity, but all this enjoying propensity can be purified if a person takes to devotional service. But then when a person commits an offense to the devotee, then that cannot be overcome unless a person begs forgiveness to the devotee of the Lord. So this is like how one should be careful in dealing with others. Of course, there are any other points, but still, it's 9:15, I'll just stop here. So to summarize, today we talked about how the demigods and demons, both were actually attached to the nectar, and the demons, especially because they had greater attachment, and when they could not get the nectar, they declared a fight against the demigods. But demigods were also attached to the nectar. That is why they became afraid when they saw the demons fighting against them. And then we talked about how this fear problem is predominant in this world. And we talked about how every person has the natural inclination to be in the natural surroundings. That is why whenever a beautiful object is described in the scriptures, that is compared to the natural beauty. We also talked about how even in the fighting, like in the Vedic culture, people actually observe certain rules and regulations. And we also talked about that point, that how when a person is absorbed, when his mind is absorbed in the Supreme Lord, then he can actually overcome the dualities in this world. He will not be affected by the dualities in this world. So if anybody has any comments or questions, I'll stop here. Kantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.